So I wanted to ask you, kind of get your viewpoint on a couple other common questions that come up with colorectal cancer. One is the issue of duration of adjuvant chemotherapy in the 3 versus 6 month question. I was just wondering if you had any patient you've seen, let's say since ASCO, where you actually utilized the 3 months that you could maybe briefly present.
I did. I've had a couple where this has already come up, and you know, the data to me, it's a bit hard to figure out what's going on there. I mean, I find that it's an incredible data set and an incredible endeavor that the international GI community put together here. I mean, we'll never have that again, probably. And the IDEA collaboration, I think, is so unique that people don't realize how many patients went into this. It's unbelievable. But I took home from that what I think what a lot of people took home from that, which is that 3 months of chemotherapy in some people is probably just as good. And those people are typically the lower risk. So the N1 patients, the patients with 2 lymph nodes or below, who you know that oxaliplatin is going to induce worse neuropathy if you keep it going. And up until last year, every patient you told them, very straightforward, FOLFOX for 6 months, is that was the end of the story. And I think what I take out of that is, you know, with these N1 patients, I had one just a few weeks ago where I'm planning to give that patient 3 months of FOLFOX.
Could you briefly present right off the top of your head that patient, what happened?
So that's a patient, a very straightforward patient that we all see every day. This is a patient who came into the office having had a left hemicolectomy for a sigmoid cancer, had 2 out of 24 lymph nodes positive, so 55-year-old lady, intelligent, full-time working attorney, and has a typical presentation of colon cancer in the sense that, you know, some obstruction type of GI symptoms with a little bit of rectal bleeding, gets taken for a scope and shows a mass in the sigmoid colon, no metastasis. It's a great situation in many ways for that patient. She gets taken quickly to the operating room, and a very moderate, typical, I'd call it a bland colon cancer, the ones we're familiar with seeing often, which is a moderately differentiated adenocarcinoma is removed with 2 out of 24 lymph nodes positive. No other warning signs there in terms of suggestion of any metastatic disease.
Just out of curiosity, had you ever had a screening colonoscopy?
No, she was in her early 50s, and not yet is the answer I got.
Just out of curiosity, you know, she's an attorney, intelligent, I guess. Any regrets that she expressed to you about not getting screened?
I mean, I asked her if this was her prior colonoscopy, and it was the typical answer. It's been on my list of things to do. And
that's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of patients, we all know that they are told over and over to get their screening colonoscopies, and, you know, they're reluctant to do it. And you're right. I mean, that's a patient who maybe a few years ago had stage 1 colon cancer or something like that. Who knows? There are some regrets, but I think that, you know, the positive side of it is that she's still very good chance likely cured as well.
So she's N1, she's got 2 positive nodes. What about the choice of therapy and specifically whether you use capecitabine or 5-FU?
So I will usually use FOLFOX. I mean, I'd say if I had to look at my patients, it's probably 3/4 to 1/4 FOLFOX over CAPOX. I just find it easier for the majority of patients in terms of toxicity profile, and especially in someone who's undergone surgery, I'm always worried about getting adequate capecitabine doses in.
I've heard people say that in this, you know, incredible analysis that the 3 months of capecitabine looked better somehow, or at least the CAPOX, the way it was delivered, looked better. Do you buy into that, or you think that's sort of overinterpreting?
I don't know what to make of that yet, other than I think we all know that capecitabine dosing and tolerability is a little bit different in Europe than it is in the United States. So it's a European patients for the most part. And in the United States, for a bunch of reasons, as we all know, that getting to those big doses of capecitabine isn't easy. So when you're trying to treat for a cure, sometimes I often will go for FOLFOX. Now, in this patient, I did start with CAPOX because she was so opposed to having a port placed or a PICC line placed. So we did decide to do CAPOX, and after one cycle, I switched her to FOLFOX because the problem became, as happens in a lot of patients, that getting that adequate dose of capecitabine in for 2 weeks, she started to develop a lot of GI toxicity and a lot of colitis type of picture, diarrhea, and hand-foot syndrome. And she's not DPD deficient or anything. It's just, in some people, a tough combination. And she had the expectation that she'd be fully working during this period because she didn't have a portacath or a PICC line. And then after seeing her response to this combination, I told her the easiest and safest way for you to get through these next 3 months and to do it properly will be to do FOLFOX. So I talked her into that.
What dose capecitabine did you use?
So I used 1 gram per minute squared BID. So it came to, I don't remember the exact dosing in her, but it was at least 1,500 BID, which isn't a huge dose, but it might have been actually 4 and 4 even. You know, I think capecitabine is, in some people, the right choice, and in some people, isn't. And the way I approach it is, if a patient is able to swallow pills and they want to try it, I try it for the most part. But I find that a lot of patients, if you really want to get them properly through their adjuvant therapy, you sometimes have to make some decisions there, which include either dose reducing your capecitabine to the point where you're worried that you're not getting adequate dosage, or switching them off of it.
You know, it's interesting because, you know, your views are very similar to what, you know, I've heard from other GI cancer investigators. And yet, I would guess that if you did a patient preference survey, you would find people, I mean, theoretically, assuming it was the same side effects, which, as you say, maybe is an issue, that there would be anything about this woman, you know, a strong preference not to have a port, et cetera. And I just wonder, I realize it's in the curative setting, but also, you know, the benefit, how much additional benefit you get by, you know, sort of pushing the dose, you know, of course we don't know, but I kind of wonder about, and, you know, thinking back to what you were saying before about regorafenib, obviously different situation, palliative, but yet, you know, the idea of starting at a dose you know will be tolerable, maybe working your way up, I guess that just doesn't wash in the, quote, curative setting.
Right. I mean, I think it's harder to justify doing that in the curative setting because you know, and perhaps the number isn't as great as we would like, but you know there are some patients here, you're going to cure them with chemotherapy, just like in any adjuvant scenario. And particularly in a young patient, we try to push the envelope and try to give them really the proper dosage. And who knows what that dose is, to be fair. The other problem with CAPOX in the adjuvant setting, as you know, is that that dose of oxaliplatin every 3 weeks at 130 per meter squared isn't easy either. So, you know, sometimes I find that that interest in not having the pump or the port and all that is an emotional reaction and not based on, you know, the practical reality, which is let's just get you through this safely and well and do it properly. So it's interesting. You have seen some switch away from, if you look nationally, from CAPOX to FOLFOX, and whether it's adjuvant or metastatic, and, you know, as more people start thinking about it a little differently.